Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another Auto Central show, Auto Trader's number one South African podcast. And I'm your host, George Meany, and I'm always joined by Wandile Sishi. How's it, Wandi?
Hey, George, how's it going? Let's talk about cars.
Good, and you? Yes, let's do that. But before we get there, where can everybody find this show?
So you can find the show every Monday on cliffcentral.com. We're streaming live. But if you want to look at our faces, we're also on the Auto Trader South Africa YouTube channel. And we're streaming simulcasts there. So if you want to look at us, the YouTube channel, but we can also, you can also, listen to the show on Spotify or iTunes Music, whatever, you prefer.
Whatever suits your fancy. If you're driving, listen to us on the podcast. If you want to see us, watch us on YouTube is what Wandi's saying. So into today's show, the episode today, we're going to unpack a little bit about the crossover and the rise of the crossover over yep. recent months and years, and maybe even discuss why a crossover exists.
Yep.
And later in the episode, we're going to get our very own expert journalist, Sean Nurse, in to review the 2020 Mercedes Benz GLA 200, which in fact is a crossover.
It is, yeah.
So this show is all about the crossover. And then lastly, as usual, we will answer all motoring questions, well, three of them to be exact, from our platform, Ask Auto Trader. So let's get right into it. The rise of the crossover. This is the name we're coining this segment. And its sales are going up.
Yeah, apparently. Allegedly going up.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
I think it is going up.
I've seen so many crossovers, and we did see that the Ford EcoSport, which is also a crossover, has been in the top 10 most searched for you know, the last like 8 months. So I think it's definitely becoming a lot more popular.
Well, I mean, the numbers tell us that it is, because the crossover has grown from under 4% market share in 2000 to nearly 40% market share internationally now, which just shows people want the crossover. But why? You know, what makes this vehicle so popular? And the popularity and growth has taken market share away from which segments, do you think?
So mostly sedans and SUVs. But, you know, there's reports all over the world saying that SUVs are growing altogether. But I think the challenge is crossovers are bucketed together with SUVs. So like in the last few years, there's been lots of additional research and people trying to understand if it's the crossover that's making SUVs grow or if it's just the SUVs.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. But so, I mean, let's try and understand quickly what is a crossover. You know, for me, a crossover is somewhere between a sedan and an SUV, got a bit more ground clearance.
I would say a crossover is a vehicle that shares its platform in two different segments. So for instance, a hatch can become a crossover if the OEM turns it into a compact SUV, for instance. And you mentioned earlier that we'll be speaking about the GLA, which I think is a similar thing. I think essentially it's just an A-class on stilts.
On stilts.
Yeah. So that's...
I mean, some examples of a crossover is the Toyota RAV4. That's a crossover.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, do people confuse compact SUVs and crossovers?
I think crossover is a broad term, and within it you'll get like subcompact SUV or giant hatchback. You know, I think there's the crossover as a whole encompasses some of the smaller SUVs or the bigger hatches.
Bigger hatches. So yeah, well, I mean, as you said earlier on, a beefed up hatchback.
Yeah, exactly.
Is really a crossover, and it's designed to look like an SUV, right?
Yeah, I mean, remember? I think it was about a year ago the Volkswagen T-Cross came out, off the popularity of the Polo platform, right?
Yeah.
I mean, when the T-Cross came out, I actually went to the launch for that, and it was stunning. I loved everything about it, but when you were inside, it was like, wow, this is. You know, it doesn't really feel like an SUV, but it's definitely more spacious.
Yeah, more spacious. So, I mean, my understanding is that the crossover isn't designed for off-road use, whereas an SUV is designed for a bit of off-road use in a lot of instances.
I think it's almost like when TVs came out and it was full HD and you had HD ready.
Oh, no, let's not go there. It's like, I can't even understand that stuff anymore.
Yeah. I think it's capable. It can, but like you'd have to be really brave.
Well, it doesn't have four-wheel drive, does it? I mean, most crossovers come front-wheel drive.
Most of them do.
Yes.
But you can, in some instances, get four-wheel drive crossovers. I think those are the ones that are really trying to steal the SUV sort of capabilities at a cheaper price, more efficient.
But isn't then that a compact SUV? when it's got things like 4x4 capabilities? Maybe we can ask Sean just now. So the Toyota RAV4 is the Corolla version of a crossover. Mm-hmm. What other crossovers do you to come to mind?
Ford EcoSport's a big one, which is sitting on the Fiesta platform. As mentioned, again, the Volkswagen T-Cross. I think the X-Trail might – no, I'm not sure if the X-Trail is, but – yeah,
I think X-Trail is more of an SUV because doesn't it have all 4x4 capability?
I think so. Yeah. It's so broad, and I think that's why a lot of people are confused by what is a crossover, and do you even consider this an SUV?
Yeah. And when it comes to fuel economy, what is the benefits of a crossover? I think it gets kind of sedan-like fuel economy.
Yeah, it does. I think that's one of the big selling points, is it's super efficient.
Super efficient.
Yeah.
Because SUVs, I mean, we know that the SUVs get 10, 11, 12 liters per 100 Ks, whereas sedans get a lot lower fuel economy, or should I say better fuel economy, because they're more streamlined, they're lower to the ground, more aerodynamic, those sorts of things. So it's another reason to buy a crossover versus an SUV is price and fuel economy.
Definitely.
Because they're cheaper than SUVs, obviously. Mm. So they're smaller, less capable. Mm. I always thought a crossover is just a sedan with more ground clearance.
I think that's, I was speaking to one of our colleagues, Robin, you were saying the same thing. Is kind of one of the big pros of a crossover is you just get more ground clearance. Mm. You can see better. Ultimately, that makes it a little bit safer for the driver. And in a collision, I think you'll be a little bit more better off. But the price does not go up super significantly.
Yeah.
And
versus a sedan. Okay.
And it's a lot lower than an SUV, a traditional SUV at least.
So some of the top selling crossovers are the VW T-Cross. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're the name of the crossovers in the name of the car. It was just T-Cross. Ford EcoSport that you mentioned earlier, Toyota RAV4, Honda CR-V is also a crossover, mm-hmm. and the Mercedes-Benz GLA 200. And and we're going to be reviewing with Sean the Mercedes-Benz just now. And on average seems to get 10% less fuel economy or better fuel economy mm-hmm. than mid-sized sedans, but provide 1.5 times the cargo space.
Yeah. So who would be potentially buying a crossover? It's not necessarily, I don't think it's like a student or anything, unless they were trying, to be like adventurers.
Is it a mommy car?
I think it's a mommy car or someone who just kind of will be carrying more cargo. Really,
more cargo. If you're a sporty person and SUVs out of your price range, and sedans too small, you can kind of have an i20 on steroids.
Look, it makes sense. Let's be honest, crossovers make sense. The more I read about this, the more we discuss it, I'm just like, wow, maybe I'm on the team of the crossovers because I currently drive a sedan or a coupe, but I'm definitely. I was telling you when we're doing the Bucky episode that I'm considering getting something a bit bigger, and this might be a quick fix, if you may.
Some of the pros that we've been talking about is crossovers are more roomy, got more ground clearance, so you can climb pavements, mm-hmm. get out of a tight spot, and then they're easier to drive, apparently. Mm. More economical mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Than SUVs, and offer better collision protection.
What about the cons? Can you think of any cons? Because
of a crossover?
Yeah. Off the top of my head, the only thing I can talk about cons is if I'm going to compare it to a traditional full-sized SUV.
Then there's going to be cons, obviously. The cons for me would be it's not quite a sedan. It's not quite an SUV. It's a little bit bigger. It's got more ground clearance. I don't think there are many cons versus a sedan, to be honest. It's I'd rather go for a crossover than go for a sedan.
I think the only thing that comes to mind is I do think
can't drop the suspension.
Well, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody who can drop your suspension. We're in South Africa. Definitely can. But the only thing I can think of is the fact that I think crossovers are being sold as SUVs. So for consumers, you go in there thinking, I'm going to get a subcompact SUV. This will kind of solve my problems of going off-roading. You get the car and it's really not built for that.
No, it's not built for off-road. So I think don't fool yourself. It's not built for off-road. Yeah. It's got a little bit more ground clearance. You can go on a dirt road.
You could if the dirt road was almost flat, I would say. If there's some sort of elevations in the texture of the land or whatever, then
undulations.
You learn something new every day. If that happens, then
I only learned that because I used to be a cyclist.
I just learned that now because I'm on the Auto Central podcast.
when the road is undulating, it's up and down. Yeah, so I suppose going on a dirt road with a crossover is a possibility, but you can't go serious 4x4ing.
I have seen a crossover off-roading. So.
Oh, you know what? I went scuba diving in Mozambique.
Yeah,
many moons back, many years back, and I used to at that point drive a Colt Bucky 4x4.
Okay,
you know, the double cab.
Yeah.
They just hit the market, and I had a Colt double cab, Mitsubishi.
Yeah.
There were a couple of friends that went, and we put all the gear on the back of my Bucky, and it was a shore entrance for scuba diving, and so we let the tires down and we drove onto the beach to, you know, get up and go diving.
Did you go in? Did the car go inside like a?
Well, my 4x4, my Colt Bucky made it easily onto the beach.
Okay.
No problem. But there was this guy in a Volvo.
Yeah, I think I know where this is going.
Yeah. It was a, I don't know what, I must actually look up the car, but it was definitely a crossover type vehicle.
Yeah.
I don't know if it had 4x4 capability, but he got beached in the sand.
Funny story, I had a similar situation when I drove my sister's, it was a sedan onto a golf bunker. And,
why would you do that?
You know, it's another story for another day.
Onto a golf bunker.
But yeah, I had to request one of the maintenance team to come and pull me out of there because I just couldn't get out of there. And I'm sure if I had a crossover, it would be a different story.
Might have been able to get out of there. Maybe not. You need 4x4 capability to get out of those things. So let's take a break. And then when we're back, we will be with Sean Nurse to review the 2020 Mercedes-Benz GLA 200. See you now. Well, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, and we have joined in the studio Sean Nurse, our expert journalist, to talk about the Mercedes-Benz crossover 2020 Mercedes-Benz GLA 200. Welcome, Sean.
Thank you. It's good to be in the new studio. It looks fantastic.
Thank you so much. New car smell, as Wendy put it. So you drove this 2020 Mercedes-Benz GLA 200, right, Sean? Tell us a little bit about your kind of high-level view.
So coming from someone who's driven the previous GLA, I felt I anticipated this car quite highly because the previous model was so disappointing to me. The first GLA just felt like a standard A-Class with some off-road cladding and not much else was thrown into it. But immediately when the first teaser images of this model came out, I thought, this looks proper. It looks like a real small SUV that was developed on the same platform as the A-Class, but definitely with more thought to create a small SUV that has its own identity.
So just remind us, I mean, we're confused as to what a compact SUV is versus a crossover. Are they one and the same thing?
So traditionally, a small SUV, and I'll use the brand Renault as an example here. Mm. They make and market two products in South Africa that are a similar price but are different. So a Duster would be considered a small SUV because it's got some form of off-road capability. Whereas a crossover would be a Captur, which is based on a Renault Clio. Mm. So generally, a crossover is a vehicle that transcends two vehicle types. It's usually based on a hatchback of some description or a vehicle that's slightly smaller than the vehicle that it eventually becomes, and then they turn it into something that looks like it may have off-road ability.
Well, so I suppose therein lies
the answer is
it looks like it's got 4x4 capability, but it doesn't.
Generally,
whereas a compact SUV generally does have 4x4 capability. Okay, so 2020 Mercedes-Benz GLA 200, no off-road capability.
I wouldn't say so, no. Okay. It's got 143 millimeters of ground clearance. You're not going to be going over any obstacles with that, no.
It's not like a four-wheel drive or anything. This is definitely like a front-wheel drive vehicle.
So for our market, we get front-wheel drive only at the moment. But overseas, you do get a 4MATIC option, which gives it a bit of off-road ability. But I think that's more for Europe, where they have winters.
You need to navigate
through snow, and you have snow tires. So it's not necessarily to go Bundu bashing. It's more for, ice and slippery terrain.
Okay. Traction. Okay. All right. So now we've got the kind of definition of crossover versus compact SUV. So what was the car actually like to drive? Because you said, when you saw the teaser images, you said this thing looks proper. When you drove it, was it proper?
It is very good, yes. The thing is, the big problem for the GLA is that the A-Class exists and so many other products that share that same platform. So when it comes to picking a product in the segment, you could get an A-Class, which is slightly cheaper than the GLA. But if you want a bit more space, I suppose you'll have to pay the premium and get the GLA. Then you look up the Mercedes line and you get a GLB, and then you get a B-Class. So and then you get an A-Class sedan, you get a CLA. There's all the same cars based on the same platform. So while it gives you a lot of options within the segment, you're pretty much getting much of a muchness in different body styles.
Okay.
But to come back to the question, it is impressive. The new A-Class, I mean, it's been a car of the year in many countries, and it's done very well in terms of sales and reception by the media and the public in general. So the GLA continues that trend, and I think will be more popular because it has that crossover styling to it.
With its positioning being a crossover split between essentially a full-on SUV being the GLC and at the lower end, like you said, the A-Class, do you think that this car, if you had to pick between the three, where would you kind of decide on?
You know, looking at the current lineup, I would say the Mercedes GLB is a very nice middle ground. The GLA might be for those who want the crossover styling but don't necessarily need the space and they want that raised ride height, whereas the GLB actually offers a degree of real-world practicality that makes it sit beautifully between the GLC and the GLA. So I would probably go GLB.
Even one further.
So if you, I mean, so what I'm hearing is that if you want the look, go for the GLA. If you want the capability, go for the GLB.
Yeah, and that's why you see crossovers being so popular, because people are going for the look and the raised ride height and the slightly bigger boot. So that's really why these cars are so popular.
And price difference, GLA, what is it going for?
The one that I drove without options is 732,000
rand. Holy cow.
Yeah. And they generally are quite generous with spec on press car. So my car was close to 900,000 rand.
Could buy an electric car for that.
Yeah, an SUV for that.
Yeah, exactly.
Sure. And the GLB, how does that compare? So, you know, with capability?
In terms of off-road capability, the GLB isn't really, again, not a product that you would take off-road. It's not, but it will have a degree of off-road ability, especially if it's got 4MATIC.
Yeah.
But none of these products really, even the GLC, they're not really made for off-road driving. Okay. And you can see that really in the tire choice of these products. I mean, I picked up that GLA from Mercedes. It was riding on 20s with low-profile tires. You're not going to...
For everybody's benefit that's listening, 20s, 20-inch wheels, right? Yeah.
Yes, 20-inch wheels, yes.
Which is big.
It's a massive set of wheels.
And it's expensive, because what does a 20-inch tire cost you?
Yeah. About 5,000
rand. 5,000 rand per tire. And most of the time, Mercedes and BMW go with run flats.
Yeah. Yeah, if you don't have a full-size spare, which a lot of these compact cars don't come with.
Mm.
So just a question with regards to the crossover again. So you saying that primarily a crossover is more of a look, sort of, that's the unique selling point versus an SUV which has the capabilities.
Yeah, it's a combination of added utility versus a hatchback and the raised ride height and styling. I think that's what's made them so popular. And in many instances, a small SUV, let's take a Duster and a Jimny, for example. Those are deeply compromised cars to drive on a daily basis because they've got a degree of off-road ability.
Mm.
Whereas if you drive a vehicle that's based on a front-wheel drive architecture like a Captur or like this GLA, they're generally as good to drive as the hatchbacks that they're based on, but they give you that raised ride height.
Raised ride height, which people are after.
Yeah.
It's going back to the tires, something just dropped into my head, and that is, isn't it just the size of the wheels that are giving most of the ride height?
Well, they do raise the ride height on the GLA, but obviously a bigger tire means a slightly taller car.
Yes.
And the car comes with 19-inch wheels as standard on the AMG line model, which I think is a bit strange to have an AMG line with a 1.3-liter four-cylinder GLA, but that's clearly Mercedes responding to what the market wants.
Yes,
I mean, people want the car to look like a little AMG, but they also want a tiny little engine.
If you swapped it up for like off-roading tires, then would you kind of solve some of these issues with regards to capabilities, or not possible?
It's just
not built for that.
I don't think you could ever really take a GLA off-road, but what you could do is improve the ride quality drastically by getting a tire with a thicker sidewall.
Okay.
Because the GLA for me was harsh, but without the benefit of you know, demonstrating any good handling characteristics.
Yeah.
So that comes down to the tire choice. You've got these thin profile tires, and it makes the car's handling not really any better for it, and the ride is very hard.
Very hard, yeah. Just trying to go like sports crossover type thing. So we're almost out of time, and so finally, Sean, your score out of 10 for this GLA?
For the particular model I tested, I'd give it a 6.5 out of 10.
6.5, there you go.
So expensive.
Is it because of the price that you've marked it down?
Yeah, and all the optional extras. I mean, 900,000 Rand for a product like that is just, it seems ludicrous to me.
Mm. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. Our very own expert journalist, Sean Nurse, reviewing the GLA 200 crossover, gives it a 6.5 out of 10. Thanks very much, Sean. And ladies and gentlemen, we'll see you straight after this. Cheers, Sean. Well, welcome back, Wandile Sishi. And every day people send Auto Trader motoring related questions about all things car buying. Mm-hmm. And today is no different. So Wendy has pulled out three questions from consumers that relate to burning things they want answers to.
Yeah, definitely.
So let's ask Auto Trader.
So the first question comes from Ratilwe, who's asking, which SUV will be cheaper to maintain when out of a service plan? So specifically amongst the X-Trail, the Toyota RAV4, the Tucson, and the CR-V.
Well, I mean, I suppose we could point to the Kinsey report on this, and that is the crossover segment in the Nissan X-Trail 1.6 is listed as the second least expensive to service in the basket at 3,997 Rand. The Tucson service basket was listed at 5,000 Rand and the CR-V listed at 6,300 Rand with the Toyota RAV4 listed for 10,000 Rand. So there you can make the decision based on...
Yeah, if price is the main concern, then that's definitely the cheapest, which is the...
Nissan X-Trail. Yeah, Nissan X-Trail. So I'd go for the Nissan X-Trail. Question number two.
So this question number two comes from Psycho Sid.
Who's asking, Psycho Sid.
Yeah. Can I waive a warranty? So they've just essentially they wanted to purchase an out-of-warranty model of a vehicle, but the dealer is refusing to waive the warranty and wants to force them to pay upwards of 11,000 Rand for an extended third-party warranty. Is this legal? If they're saying that it's company policy?
Well, I suppose there's a couple of ways to look at this. But if it's an out-of-warranty car and the dealer wants to force you to take the warranty, you know, and you don't want it, well, you know, you should walk away from the deal.
Yeah.
You know, at the end of the day, if the dealer has a product, a basket or bundle that he wants to sell together, that's his product basket and bundle based on the product he wants to sell. So, the dealer's definitely not forcing you or can't force you to take the warranty.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't want to sell you the car, he doesn't have to sell you the car. Yeah. If you don't want to take the car, you don't have to take the car either. And I definitely wouldn't if the warranty doesn't suit you. You know, you're probably in for a bit of a fight, and it's a fight probably not worth having.
Yeah, honestly, yeah.
Just go on to the next car. There are 70,000 of them on Auto Trader.
Yeah, you're spoiled for choice.
Exactly.
There's no need to be...
Go get a new one.
Or feel forced. You totally have agency to decide exactly what you want to buy and how you want to buy it.
So. Yeah, yeah. I mean, unless this car is like so unique that...
that is true, yeah.
You know, that you just can't walk... away. And often people buy cars under emotional conditions anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, take a step back, take a few breaths.
Yeah.
Go search for another one. Autotrader.co.za today.
Yeah. And finally, the third question comes from Vusi, who's asking, I'm very interested in the new Ford F-150, but it's made for USA only. Is it a wise decision to import one? And what's the maintenance?
So first of all, you are aware that America drives on the other side of the road, on the wrong side of the road.
That's going to be the
big whole story about why that is. But that's going to be your biggest challenge, because importing a left-hand drive car you can't do in South Africa unless the car already pre-exists in the country or has been fitted with the right-hand drive conversion, which is very expensive to do. So if you do import the car, you're going to have to potentially do that conversion.
I have seen actually on Auto Trader that there are cases of even the F-150, which you can actually buy, or the Dodge Ram, which are also just trucks really. With the conversion's already been done, but the price is
ludicrous because it's expensive to do that conversion, right? Yeah. So, you know, is it a wise decision to import one? No, not in my opinion.
Yeah, just get a Raptor or something.
Yeah, get something that's supported in South Africa. Yeah. Unless you really have money to burn, and you know, most people don't in today's market. I don't think it's a wise thing to do.
And then on the question of maintenance, because it's not supported in South Africa, it's just going to be
even more expensive.
At your own risk, yeah.
Yeah.
So rather not
have an accident with it, and it's going to stand. Mm. Well, that's all we have time for, Wandile Sishi. And my name is George Mini, and Wandile Sishi, ladies and gentlemen, it's been epic. See you next time.